and what the future will bring, and I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and the views of our callers. Now, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have this with us, Dr. Russell Blaylock. And Dr. Blaylock is a retired neurosurgeon I'd probably known for 20, 25 years, something like that. Certainly one of the leaders of the conservative movement, and certainly one of the best educated people on what's really going on in the medical field. And he researches the medical literature and puts out a newsletter. We'll mention later how you can get it. We carry his book, The Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, The Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills, and of course the book Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients. But, and we have a 4-tape set of some of my interviews with him entitled Life Saving Health Secrets. But Russell, thank you so very much for being with us today.
Well, thank you.
What are we going to talk about?
Well, I think probably we need to continue our discussion about hardening of the arteries, heart attacks, strokes.
I thought that was so fascinating. Would you please tell our listeners, I know when I was in medical school and even after I was practicing, and they would show us these pictures of the arteries of the rabbits, and they were fed high cholesterol diets, and you could just see those plaques forming in there. And then we were told if they took them off the high cholesterol diet, the plaques went away. So that would certainly point out that, well, at least the logical conclusion would be that it's the cholesterol that creates the problem. But is that really the case?
Well, actually, what I did is I went back and looked up all of these old studies just to see exactly what they were doing to produce this terrible hardening of the arteries in these rabbits. And what they would do is they'd take the rabbit and they would give them the high cholesterol, but cholesterol is hard to dissolve, so they would dissolve it in corn oil or safflower oil, one of the so-called heart healthy oils. And what they found is when you dissolved it in the oil, it produced a severe arteriosclerosis. Well, they just made the assumption it was the cholesterol. But later experiments, a few years later, back in the 1950s, even up to this 1963, they did some interesting studies in which they used the same balance of these omega-6 oils, like safflower oil and corn oil. They used the same concentration that people eat, and they mixed it with just little tiny bits of cholesterol to see what it would do. Well, it would produce rampant arteriosclerosis. When they would prevent the cholesterol from oxidizing, they didn't get hardly any arteriosclerosis. When they mixed the cholesterol with partially hydrogenated oil, that's when they saw the worst cholesterol arteriosclerosis at all. So when you look at their diagrams, it shows that when you feed them partially hydrogenated oils, that's what you find in all of these baked products and chips and pies, and when you feed them this partially hydrogenated oil or hydrogenated oil, their cholesterol level just went out the ceiling. And that's just adding normal amounts of cholesterol to their diet, little small amounts.
All right, so it really wasn't the cholesterol at all, it was the hydrogenated oils, but of course, that if people realize that, well, they might be taking all these statin drugs.
Well, what we're looking at is that the recommendations for the last 70 years was, number one, to eat more partially hydrogenated oils, and to eat the polyunsaturated vegetable oils, all of which, if you look back at the original study, is what produced the terrible arteriosclerosis in these rabbits.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon, Dr. Russell Blaylock. And Dr. Blaylock was simply talking about the original studies that were done 50, 60 years ago to try to prove that cholesterol produced arteriosclerosis. And what they did is they took the cholesterol, they put it in hydrogenated oils, they fed it to the rabbits or the animals. They got rampant arteriosclerosis. So they assumed it was the cholesterol. And then only much later did they realize it wasn't the cholesterol. It was the hydrogenated oils, the omega-6 oils that were doing the problem, not the cholesterol. And yet they've given us the wrong recommendations for how many licks? 50 or 60 years?
It's been going on 70 years.
All right, fine. So it's really, but doesn't somebody know this? I mean, certainly you've gone back and looked at the studies. There got to be people in government who know that the advice they've been giving us for, protecting our arteries has not been accurate.
Well, some of these original studies back in the 50s, in fact, made that point that you could feed rabbits just a pure meat diet and produce the same thing. Anytime you altered the rabbit's diet, what happened is you were producing an abnormal metabolism in the rabbit. It produced the high cholesterol, and that produced the problem. But what the trans fatty acids in that partially hydrogenated oil was doing, and the omega-6 oils was doing, it was oxidizing the cholesterol. And it's only oxidized cholesterol that causes any problem. Well, recently they did a study in humans, and they had volunteers eat a diet that contained oxidized cholesterol to see what would happen. And it happened just like in the rabbits. They produced oxidized cholesterol in their blood, particularly the LDL-type cholesterol. And all of the subsequent studies have shown, these are the modern studies, have shown that only oxidized cholesterol causes any problem whatsoever.
Well, is that why the antioxidants then tend to help?
Not only do they help, but they produce a dramatic reduction in arteriosclerosis. For instance, if you look at combining a Mediterranean diet, which has olive oil and omega-3 fats, a lot of vegetables, avoids the heavy meats, if you look at that diet and you add some red wine to it and exercise, it reduces hardening of the arteries and coronary artery disease 76%. That is far greater than even the best of the results reported for any statin drug. So just a dietary change alone can dramatically reduce your risk of ever having a heart attack or a stroke. When they did just vitamin C and E combinations, they found a 60% reduction. Well, then we look at the big studies with the statin drugs.
Hold that thought there, so we want to bring other stations right on here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Dr. Russell Blaylock, and he was just saying that, certainly if you fed people a Mediterranean diet with lots of fruits and vegetables, and even though they were having a lot of olive oil, it gave them a little red wine or resveratrol along with that, why, you cut the incidence of hardening of the arteries over 70%, but if you simply gave them vitamin C and vitamin E, you got the incidence of hardening of the arteries down at least 6%. So pick the story up there.
Well, the C and E reduced it 60%, and the statins, when they combined all the big studies, they found it reduced the risk 20%. So here you have a three-time higher reduction in the risk of having a heart attack or a stroke if you just take vitamin C and E versus these dangerous, expensive drugs. When you look at all the nutritional studies together and the experimental studies, the results are dramatic for the nutritional supplementation treatment, far exceeding anything the statins can do. For instance, when they looked at quercetin in the experimental rabbits, and they gave them this high cholesterol, high omega-3 trans fatty acid diet plus quercetin, it reduced the arteriosclerosis 3,500%, a dramatic reduction in arteriosclerosis. When they used very high doses of vitamin E, they saw an almost complete disappearance of the arteriosclerosis. So we, even in the experimental studies, when they reproduce the very studies that were done in the beginning, they're seeing that you can eradicate arteriosclerosis by dietary changes and certain supplements. Ellagic acid produced almost a greatest reduction in arteriosclerosis as we saw with quercetin. So if you combine things like vitamin C and E and quercetin and curcumin and ellagic acid, all of these things are available, you would virtually eliminate arteriosclerosis as a problem. And what we see is that arteriosclerosis begins almost at birth. There's a study done by my old professor, who was one of the leaders in pathology and arteriosclerosis from the very beginning, and he autopsied babies that died from other causes and found that the early streaks, fatty streaks in the arteries, which were the earliest stages of arteriosclerosis, had already begun in babies. And by the time they were teenagers, you saw advanced levels of these fatty streaks going into the full-blown arteriosclerosis by the time they're in their 30s. So this process begins very early in life. So if we start these things, these dietary changes, in our young children, and particularly, you know, at least by teenage years, you would virtually eliminate arteriosclerosis, heart attacks, and strokes as a problem in this country and save millions of lives. 1 million people a year are dying of heart attacks a year, and 160,000 strokes. And we see that 64 million people have cardiovascular disease at this present time. So we're talking about a massive reduction in health care costs in this country by a simple process. If you just took young children and put them on a multiple vitamin, added a little quercetin and curcumin to it, made sure they took their fish oils, and you did that throughout the remainder of their life, we could eliminate this as a health problem in the United States. Now, this is well known. I mean, this is all through the literature. The fact is, they don't want this problem solved because it's just too blatant that it's easy to solve. And this, they're making billions. Last figure I saw, $27 billion worldwide on the sale of statin drugs, and it's growing every day. Now, statins, it was proven in their biggest study, statins do not reduce heart attacks by reducing cholesterol. They do it because they're anti-inflammatory, they're free radical scavengers, in other words, they're antioxidants. They reduce the inflammatory reaction. They reduce the reactive protein. That's why it's reducing heart attacks and strokes, and they admit it in these giant studies. But physicians don't read them. Now look at the indications doctors have for putting people on statins. It's because you have an elevated cholesterol, particularly if it's an LDL cholesterol. Well, the studies show there's no relationship. So if you have an elevated LDL cholesterol by itself, you're at no greater risk than if it was normal. And that's what the literature is showing. But they don't want you to know that. The cause of arteriosclerosis is chronic inflammation in the walls of the blood vessel, which can be due to a lot of different things. It can be due to viral infections, bacterial infections, heavy metals. MSG can do it. Abnormal fat oxidation can do it. All these things can do it. And we know that is the cause of arteriosclerosis. In fact, one big study, an expert in the field, said it's obvious that inflammation plays a part at every stage of atherosclerosis. So they know that, but they don't want the doctors to know it, and they don't want the public to know it for sure, so they can sell these drugs.
Well, I really think that the statins is one of the greatest scams that they've ever put over the American people. Now, you were saying some of the studies show a 20% decrease. Now, is that an absolute decrease? Are they using these relative numbers that, you know, a decrease from 3 to 2% is, you know, a 50% or something like that improvement? They seem to be able to juggle these figures around. How much protection do you actually get from a heart attack or a stroke by taking statin drugs?
Well, it depends. The results show that if you don't have any of the risk factors other than your elevated cholesterol, in other words, you're not hypertensive, you're not overweight, you don't have diabetes or insulin resistance, your risk is almost no greater than a person with perfect cholesterol. So, you know, that's the most important thing. Number two is that half the people who have a heart attack or stroke have absolutely normal cholesterol levels, including LDL cholesterol. This has been known for at least 2 or 3 decades. So we know for sure that half of everybody that's dying from a heart attack has nothing to do with their cholesterol lipids at all, period. And it's other factors. For instance, if you look at black people have very high HDL protective cholesterol, much higher than white people. They have the same to lower levels of LDL. They have much lower triglyceride levels. These are all things that are supposed to cause heart attacks. So if we look at their profile of their lipids, they should be infinitely healthier than the white population. but actually they have the highest rate of heart attacks and strokes of any race in the United States and in the world. So we have to look at why. Well, they, number one, have the lowest magnesium level of any of the races. They have the highest levels of inflammation as measured by the C-reactive protein. So they have chronic inflammation. They have the highest levels of insulin resistance, in other words, type 2 diabetes and metabolic syndrome. Even though their lipids look a lot better than white people, so it shows, number one, the lipid problem is not their problem. There's something else. Well, the something else is chronic inflammation. And when you track it down, the cause of the chronic inflammation is chronic magnesium deficiency. When people's magnesium level is chronically low, their inflammation increases dramatically, their free radical generation increases dramatically. The two things that are most associated with atherosclerosis, heart attacks, and strokes. When you raise the magnesium level in people, and there's a new study shows that it dramatically reduces metabolic syndrome, it corrects the insulin resistance problem, it lowers blood pressure, and it prevents inflammation. It lowers the C-reactive protein. All of the things that are truly related to heart attacks and strokes. But again, they don't want the physicians to know this, and they don't want the public to know this. Because then the public would go to their doctor, and the doctor said, well, you have elevated cholesterol. I need to put you on this statin. And you say, well, I want a C-reactive protein done. And so you go get your C-reactive protein, find out it's very low. You really don't have any inflammation problem in your body. You get a magnesium level, and you find out it's normal. And you have a good diet with magnesium in it. You're not hypertensive. So you could tell your doctor, well, you know, the studies show that I'm at no greater risk than a person with perfectly low levels of LDL and cholesterol. And the literature backs that up 100%.
Well, you know, most people don't even think about the magnesium, and yet this is really so vitally important, isn't it?
Oh, yes, because years ago, I mean, back when I was in medical school, there used to be all these studies come out that found that people that lived in soft water areas have much higher heart attack and stroke rates than people who live in hard water areas. And that's because the hard water had more magnesium in it. And so they did studies and measured magnesium levels and found, sure enough, that was the strongest correlation. And when they've done similar studies today measuring magnesium levels, they find people with the highest magnesium intake have by far the lowest incidence of heart attack and stroke rates. Significantly lower than people with low levels. They also have dramatically lower blood pressure, dramatically lower incidence of diabetes and metabolic syndrome, all these diseases. So it's the low magnesium that's triggering the abnormal metabolism that produces this, because we know that in humans, as well as experimental animals, if you lower their magnesium intake, the first thing that happens is the LDL cholesterol goes up, HDL cholesterol goes down, and the total cholesterol goes up. So it's a magnesium effect. If you re-add the magnesium to the diet, the lipids all correct themselves. That's the other thing they don't want doctors and patients to know.
Well, now, of course, how should you take the magnesium? Should you take a magnesium citrate? There are some combinations of a magnesium citrate oxide and aspartate. Would they be good?
Well, the magnesium citrate or the citrate malate form is the most absorbable and safest. Aspartate is aspartic acid, which is an excitotoxin, so I don't recommend that.
All right, fine. So basically, they should be on perhaps some sort of a magnesium citrate. Does it matter whether it's a tablet or whether it's a capsule?
Well, it should be a powder and a capsule, and they should take it between meals and never take it with tea, because tea's high in aluminum. The citrate increases aluminum absorption.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Russell Blaylock. And listen to what he's saying, ladies and gentlemen. It's very important. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Dr. Russell Blaylock. We're talking really right now about magnesium. Is there anything else we should be covered as far as the magnesium is concerned? Do you think that most people should really be on some sort of a magnesium supplement?
Oh, yes, because, you know, one of the very large studies they did about 10 years ago showed that 75% of the American population is magnesium deficient, and that about two-thirds of those are severe deficiencies. And that's because of our diet. We don't eat many fruits and vegetables, which is your leading source of magnesium. We drink a lot of carbonated drinks, which lowers magnesium. We're under a lot of stress, which lowers magnesium. If you have diabetic syndrome where your insulin level is high, that depletes magnesium. There's a lot of things that deplete magnesium. Almost all of your cardiovascular drugs, your drugs for hypertension, birth control pills, all these are powerfully deplete magnesium from the body. So most people are magnesium depleted. And it takes a good while taking oral magnesium to get your levels back up to normal. But once you do, that dramatically reduces your inflammation and all of these different things we talked about. And one of the interesting studies they did on magnesium, they looked at people who had heart attacks. And during surgery, they would biopsy these vessels that were badly occluded. And they found out that the vessel wall had very low magnesium levels. And then they looked at aortas that had bad arteriosclerosis in it. They found the same thing. They had very low magnesium levels in it. And when they looked at normal vessels, they had significantly elevated levels of magnesium. So we have all these areas of evidence from the diets, from the epidemiologic studies, biopsying the vessels themselves. We have the whole mechanism worked out as how low magnesium causes it. Yet despite this massive information, none of this is getting out to the public. And doctors are as much in the dark as the public. They have no clue as to the importance of magnesium. And, of course, their answer is, well, let's get a blood magnesium. Well, magnesium, 99%, is in the tissues, not in the blood. So when you have a normal level of blood magnesium, that does not tell you anything about your tissue level. You know, at best you'd have to get what we call an RBC magnesium level. That's where you measure it out of the red blood cell. But generally, since everyone has magnesium deficiency of some sort, you should take extra magnesium. And your body will adjust it. If you're taking too much, it'll excrete the excess. So you're not going to become toxic as long as your kidneys are functioning normally.
You know, it's the most amazing thing because I never, in all the years I've practiced medicine, ever heard anybody talk about magnesium. I heard him talk about zinc. Oh, zinc is so important, but nothing about magnesium or selenium for that matter.
Yeah, in fact, diabetics, it's known and throughout the medical literature that magnesium deficiency is severe in diabetes. Well, the leading group that you'll find arteriosclerosis, heart attack, and stroke in is diabetics. We know that many of the complications of diabetes are related to magnesium deficiency. That's been known for years. There was an article that appeared in one of the journals called Magnesium, the Forgotten Element. And this was the doctor's, the researchers called it. Here's an element in your blood and in your body, your tissues, that is so vital, yet no one writes about it. You know, to the practicing physician. It's all through the literature, but the practicing physician is never told to use it.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Dr. Russell Blaylock, and he's simply talking about the importance of magnesium, saying most people are deficient in magnesium. They've actually biopsied in surgery arteries that had arteriosclerosis or aortas that had arteriosclerosis, and they were deficient in magnesium. And yet when they biopsied normal arteries and normal aortas, they had plenty of magnesium. He pointed out that certainly diabetics are deficient in magnesium, and they have such high levels of heart disease, both arteriosclerosis and certainly other things that predispose them to all sorts of problems. And so magnesium is so vital, and nobody ever writes about it, although it's all over the literature. Would that be a fair statement?
Absolutely. They're not writing about it in the clinical literature, in other words, what doctors would base their treatment on. But it's all through the research literature, all through studies that have been done on all these different groups. And the cardiovascular surgeons, to their credit, my friends that are cardiovascular surgeons said, well, that's one of our biggest problems. They said, we'll lose patients all the time because we can't get their magnesium levels up. And that's because they go into surgery with such dramatically low magnesium levels. And so the surgeon is just pouring magnesium to him, and he can't get it in fast enough, and the patient dies. When we look at a syndrome that's growing in this country called sudden cardiac death, that's where these young people suddenly drop dead. You hear about it all the time. And even elderly will drop dead just out of the blue and in perfect health. So we know that there's this growing problem of this sudden cardiac death where people drop dead. And the cause seems to be, in a majority of cases, magnesium deficiency. And when they reproduced it experimentally, see what happened. They lowered the magnesium in animals' body and found out if you frighten the animal with the low magnesium, 100% of them will die. If you raise their magnesium and frighten them, nothing happens. So we know the same thing can happen to humans, that if you have stress and your magnesium is low, the heart becomes hyper-irritable, develops what we call an arrhythmia, an abnormal heartbeat, and that's the leading cause of death in people who have a heart attack.
In other words, that's the ventricular fibrillation we hear so much about.
Right, exactly.
And I think it's so important that people understand that magnesium tends to soothe the heart, so it doesn't go into the cardiac irregularities.
Right.
And it has an effect like that on the brain, and it has that effect on the blood vessels, which is why it can help to bring down the blood pressure, can it?
Exactly. And one of the leading causes of blood pressure elevation is magnesium deficiency. And when you add significant amounts of magnesium and potassium, it'll lower the blood pressure. This is the other reason why you see such high incidence of hypertension in black people. And that's because they have the highest incidence of magnesium deficiency. You know, when you and I were in medical school, they taught us about putting potassium in the IV with the sodium chloride, but they never mentioned magnesium. In my practice, I use large doses of magnesium in all my brain trauma patients and brain tumor patients, and they did wonderful. One of the things they never developed was pulmonary embolism. As you know, that's a big problem in orthopedics.
Sure.
Developing pulmonary embolism because of the blood clotting in the legs and shooting up into the lungs. Well, magnesium prevents that. So, if the doctors would put their patients on magnesium during surgery, they wouldn't have that problem.
Well, I guess I remember the only time we ever used to use magnesium at all, other than milk and magnesium, was, you gave it to a woman who were kind of about to deliver. They were cramping, and they were convulsing. They had high blood pressure. Give them mag sulfate, and it quieted them down. But that's the only thing I was ever taught about the use of magnesium, and yet it is really so vital to our health, and I don't think most doctors have any idea how important it is or that so many people have these chronic deficiencies.
Exactly. In fact, I have a beautiful case that was reported in one of the journals of an elderly woman who came into the hospital, and they put her on IVs, and she lapsed into a coma. They couldn't figure out why. And so eventually they got around to getting a blood magnesium level and found it dramatically low. They gave her a magnesium infusion, and she woke up.
But, of course, they don't even do that routinely, don't you? Have to get that. At least when I was, I can't ever remember that, but part of a routine scrub.
Oh, it's rare that a doctor level order magnesium. They never think of it.
Right.
But it's in searching the literature after reading that case, I found it actually it's quite common. The elderly will be severely magnesium deficient, and they'll go into a coma if you give them intravenous fluids without magnesium.
Well, I think it's such an important thing. In fact, we carry an excellent book on that. Do you cover that in your natural health and nutrition secrets and can save your life?
Oh, absolutely. Uh-huh. I emphasize that throughout the book, the importance of magnesium. You get a lot of examples in some details about the heart and the brain and diabetics. It's just an essential element that's totally forgotten by practicing physicians.
Well, let me suggest, if you haven't read Dr. Blaylock's book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, shame on you. You need to get it. You need to read it. It's sort of a standard Bible in our home. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Russell Blaylock, and we've been talking about magnesium and its importance. And of course, Dr. Blaylock mentions that in his book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. Now, is there anything more we need to cover as far as the magnesium concerned?
Well, you could talk about magnesium for a very long time.
Well, if you want to talk about it, there's no rules and regulations. We're going to talk about what you think is important for our listeners to know.
Well, I think one of the really interesting things about magnesium that happens when your levels are low is that you develop this widespread inflammation throughout your body. And it also causes your body to start producing a lot of free radicals. And this leads to a lot of disease, joint pain, muscle pain, weakness, fatigue, advances brain disorders like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, because inflammation is behind all of these disorders. Free radicals are behind all of these disorders. And when you raise the magnesium level, you see the opposite effect. It dramatically reduces inflammation, dramatically reduces free radicals, and it increases a very important antioxidant in your cells called glutathione. Sickness is closely related to glutathione levels. People that have high levels have the lowest incidence of cancer, heart attack, stroke, Alzheimer's. It protects them against a lot of diseases. It protects you against lead poisoning, mercury poisoning. All of these different heavy metal poisonings are reduced when you have glutathione levels elevated. So magnesium is one way to do that. Now, a lot of other things do, too, like alpha-lipoic acid. The L-carnitine increases it. Coenzyme Q10 increases it. Most of your B vitamins, like riboflavin, thiamine, they raise it. So there's a lot of ways to increase your glutathione levels. So if you mix them all together, you get a lot better effect. Speaking about mixing these things, there's an interesting study that was just done in which they looked at cardiac failure patients, some of which were ready for heart transplants, and they gave them this mixture of coenzyme Q10 plus all the big B vitamins and C and E, and they found a dramatic improvement in their heart function. And several of them that were scheduled for heart transplant were taken off the list because their heart function improved so dramatically. And the conclusion at the end of the article by the author of the article was that this shows that these nutrients need to be given together, that we can't study nutrients one at a time like we do drugs. And so many of these studies that don't show the full effects are because they tried to use a nutrient by itself.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Russell Blaylock, and we're talking about magnesium, the miracle of magnesium, something that most people are deficient in, and yet it has a dramatic effect on so many aspects of our life and cuts down on the hyperirritability of our hearts and on the high blood pressure. And we'll pick up the story there, Russell.
Mixing all of these antioxidants and vitamins together, and multiple studies are showing that you get much greater effectiveness. And this heart failure study was really dramatic because it saved some people from having to have heart transplants. A lot of these organs that seem to be failing and so bad off that they need to be replaced, now we're finding if you replace the nutrients, you can save these organs. You can save hearts and lungs and kidneys if you give the proper nutrition. And some of these things are quite dramatic, like the CoQ10 and the L-carnitine in heart failure is dramatic. The heart uses a tremendous amount of CoQ10 because that's a major energy supplier to heart muscles and to the brain. Now, it's ironic that statin drugs dramatically lower CoQ10 levels. And this may explain this dramatic increase in congestive heart failure we're seeing in this country, because millions of people are taking statin drugs, and it's depleting their CoQ10 level.
And I think it's so interesting that very, very few physicians will place their patients on CoQ10 when they're on statin drugs, because the detailed people never tell them. And the companies don't tell them that they're decreasing the CoQ10 levels, predisposing the patient to congestive heart failure. They begin to get congestive heart failure. Then you go ahead and treat the congestive heart failure without ever actually getting to the cause of it.
Right. The enzyme that statins inhibit, HMG-CoA reductase, is also the enzyme that produces coenzyme Q10. And that's why it lowers the CoQ10 level. In fact, I talked to a friend of mine who's a very good internist, internal medicine physician, and I asked him about it. I said, do you give your patients on statin drugs, do you give them CoQ10? And he said, well, you know, if they develop muscle pains or weakness, I'll put them on it. And he said, a lot of them will get a lot better, and I can keep them on the statin drug. He said, but I don't routinely give it to them. And I said, well, why don't you give it to all of them? I said, they're all becoming depleted. And I said, the CoQ10 is used by the brain and used by the heart. And I explained a little bit to him. And he said, well, he said, you always did know a lot more biochemistry than me. He said, I really don't know what all that is. And I said, you know, this is the average practicing physician out there.
And a good man. I'm sure he's trying to do the best he can.
He's excellent at what he does. But they're not being told what these things are doing, what these statin drugs are doing, that they're producing heart failure. They're producing brain degeneration because they're denying the brain and the heart one of its critical nutrients. But it was just humorous that he would give some of the patients, if they got really bad off, he'd give them some CoQ10. But the rest of them, he didn't think that it had any function whatsoever. And this is the problem we have with our physicians. And as you remember in med school, biochemistry was not something that a lot of people were interested in. Nutrition wasn't even taught in medical school or our residency training. I didn't have 1 minute of it. And so most physicians are just completely baffled by all this. They don't understand all this complex nutritional chemistry and biochemistry. So, you know, they know the drugs and they know the drug dosages and so actually, you know, they're becoming nothing but pharmacologists, you know, advanced degree pharmacologists, because that's what they do. They deal with drugs and balancing drugs. And they think if there's not a drug for a condition, they don't know what to do. For instance, my wife went to her ophthalmologist for an exam, and we were looking at some of the brochures, and they had a brochure on dry eyes. And we looked at it, and that's a major problem in postmenopausal women. And their recommendation was an eye drop and a humidifier. Well, there's several good studies that shows that omega-3 fatty acids and gamma linoleic acid, GLA oil, dramatically improves the dry eye problem in postmenopausal women and in aging. And it improves the softness of the skin. And we tried it on, you know, lots and lots of people, and they're just amazed at how much improvement they have in their dry eye problem, and never use an eye drop. But the ophthalmology world is completely blind to this. They know nothing about it. It has to be some sort of pharmaceutical drug, or they don't know about it.
Well, I think it's so vitally important. This is why we invite you to come on. We do programs on the health issues, because this is the only way the average person is going to learn anything about it. You're not going to learn about it, you know, certainly in the average newspaper or the average magazine. Because, of course, so much of what they put out just is not true. They try to tell you that, you know, there's no relationship between autism and mercury and the vaccines. They know that. The latest study is perfectly all right to put the mercury fillings in, you know. They've done 2 studies, and we can assure you mercury fillings don't do any harm, but the people who are putting out the study are the people who have a vested interest in continuing doing the damage to people. So hopefully our listeners will at least take under advisement what Dr. Blaylock is saying and get the literature, and we have some excellent books on these subjects, and I hope that you'll study it if you're out there, ladies and gentlemen. Find out what the truth is, because your health is your business, not somebody else's, and if you don't look after your health, why, nobody else is going to.
Well, I recently reviewed both of those papers that appeared in a very prestigious journal, the Journal of the American Medical Association. And so I went through them meticulously. Well, one of the articles, which is the 7-year study on the safety of dental amalgam with its mercury, it was written by a person who testified on the safety of dental amalgam for the AMA before he ever wrote this article. So he had a vested interest. The article is very poorly written. The first article, which has is better written, but it has a lot of flaws in it. The basic flaw is when they looked at the baseline on these children, they measured their urine mercury levels, and they said they found no mercury in 93% of them's urine. When they retested them at the end of the study, 45% had mercury in the urine, and those who did not have the dental amalgam, that is the kids that had the ceramic filling. Well, if 45% of the kids that are supposed to be free of mercury have mercury in their urine at the end of the study, that means they're getting it from somewhere else. Vaccination, eating fish, some other source. And so they should have thrown that out. They should have taken that 45% and thrown out, because that ruins your study. But they didn't. They went ahead and used these kids and said, see, we don't see any difference in the two groups. Well, of course not, if both groups have elevated mercury levels. So, you know, there's a lot of problems here. And, of course, the other problem is when you're measuring a 10-year-old kid with a neuropsychological testing, that tells you nothing about the kid when he gets into high school and college work and has to do much more intensive thinking and logical use of his brain. He's not going to be able to do it. So you're measuring very crude measures in a 5 to 10-year-old child. And that was the problem with the study. And they did the same thing when they did the study on the Faroe Islands of the island kids who were exposed to eating mercury in the fish. They used these studies that were very crude and said, well, we didn't see any difference in their IQ. But later, when more accurate tests were done, they did find problems. And they know that if you find problems when they're age 10, those problems are going to be greatly, greatly magnified when that child is a teenager in college. Has to function competitively. He's not going to be able to do it, because that mercury will damage enough of his brain, he'll never excel. So it's sort of a chemical dumbing down of these children. And that's the bottom line, is when you have, 100 million, 120 million fillings with mercury in it being put in every year, you're going to have a lot of dumbing down in children. And when you have pregnant women putting this amalgam in their teeth, same thing's going to happen. The other thing I found interesting about the study is in 2003, there was an article put out by the ADA and the Life Sciences Research Office, which said mercury does not escape from these dental fillings, that all of that's just a myth made up by the opponents. But in both these articles, they not only admitted it was absorbed, but they measured it in their children as well, and admitted that the children who had dental amalgam had significantly elevated mercury levels after the amalgam was put in their teeth.
They're talking about, now, was that the blood level, or how did they measure that?
Well, it was a urine level.
A urine level. Okay, so they had an elevated urine level, and then eventually, apparently, it went down. But that elevated urine level, how many of these children had already begun to absorb that into their brain, that it wouldn't get out of the brain?
Yeah, because mercury is a fat-soluble substance. And that's the other thing they ignore in all these studies. It's a fat-soluble substance, so the brain being 60% fat, it's stored in the brain. So you excrete some of it, and gradually you'll get rid of a lot of it in your body, but you don't get rid of hardly any of it that's in your brain. It stays there.
Well, aren't there some children who are much more prone because of the glutathione levels to accumulate in their brains?
Well, exactly. It depends on your diet. For instance, if you have high selenium intake, that dramatically reduces the impact of mercury. And that's directly connected again to glutathione. But that's one way to reduce the toxicity to the brain. And actually, selenium will help remove it from the brain. Garlic will also help remove it from the brain. So, you know, there's a lot of variability in absorption. And they found out also that when you measure hair levels of mercury, actually the kids who have the lowest hair level have the greatest brain accumulation. So, you know, that's another reason they had this phony study. They could say, oh, well, the hair level, the kids with the low hair level had just the same IQ as the one with the high hair level. Well, actually, the ones that had it high in the hair were excreting more of it. So, actually, their brain level was lower than the kid who had a low hair level. So, you know, it's these subtleties that we know in metabolism of mercury that make all the difference, and they know this is too complex for most of the public. So the public's not going to understand it. The media sure is not going to understand it. So the media's going to report two impressive studies done on dental amalgam found no problem.
And then what was most interesting is that my local newspaper mentioned the very high level immediately after they put the amalgam fillings into the children, a very high level urine, you know, but then eventually after a time it went away. In the New York Times, they deleted that. In other words, the New York Times simply did not mention that there was a very dramatic, at least a significant increase in the urine level of mercury after they put the fillings in. So basically, when you put those fillings in, why you just apparently there's a tremendous amount of mercury that gets into the child system, and how much of that goes to the brain. But the New York Times saw fit to censor the article and delete that part.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the American Dental Association is a very powerful organization. And, of course, the government has a vested interest because they've approved its use. And they continue to approve its use. And so they have a vested interest. So you have these two powerful groups that also have a tremendous influence on the media. And so they're going to, you know, downplay these things. And any article that's published, no matter how poor in quality, if it gives the okay to using dental amalgam, they're going to report, oh, we found no problem, it's okay in children. And they did admit in one of the articles, said, well, you know, if you put that amalgam in younger when the brain is undergoing more formation, more of its formation, you may have a lot more problems. Well, at age 2 to 10, the brain is still undergoing a lot of formation. In fact, the frontal lobes of the brain, which has to do with your control of behavior and ability to learn and concentrate, is not fully developed until you're age 21. So, you know, it's ludicrous to say, well, in that young age, because the brain's forming, we shouldn't use it, when you know that the frontal lobes, one of the most important parts of your brain, is still undergoing dramatic development from age 5 to 21. And you're pumping all of this mercury into the brain. That's just, you know, that's insanity.
Well, I think there are a lot of things insane going, whether it be the use of aspartic acid or the use of MSG, which they know is toxic to the brain, the use of fluoride, which they know that is toxic to the brain, the use of aluminum in vaccines, which they know is toxic to the brain, and the use of mercury in vaccines, and all the taken out of the childhood vaccines, at least they say they have. They've left it in the influenza vaccine, which they recommend for 6-month-old children and for pregnant women, where, of course, you give it to them. The child, you know, in utero will get the highest possible level of mercury.
Oh, yeah. And then when the states try to outlaw it, you know, try to say, well, in this state we won't allow it, now we're starting to see state legislatures refuse to do it. We're not going to outlaw the use of these high mercury vaccines in children. Despite this brand new study that showed that the significant drop in autism occurred when most of the mercury was taken out of childhood vaccines, something like a 34-35% drop in autism, the first time it's fallen at all since all of this began.
Well, it was here in California, wasn't it, when they actually found that since they supposedly took it out of, what, about 2002, 2003, it was all out?
Right.
And, of course, then the incidence of autism begins to drop, new cases. So I don't think there's no question at all. I mean, why is it dangerous for a pregnant woman to eat fish where it's all right to give her a mercury shot that'll go directly across her uterus through her placenta into the child? Or they wanted to give that those toxic doses of mercury to children in the nursery, and they'd still be doing it if it hadn't been for people like you and some of the parents who, you know, put such pressure on the American Journal of Pediatrics and the CDC that they said, well, we'll take it out, but of course we're going to leave it in for all the rest of the children in the world. And we ship these you know, poisonous vaccines to children in all the third world countries. Why would you do something like that? If it isn't safe for American children, why is it safe for children in third world countries?
Sure, sort of like the live polio vaccine. Well, it was deemed as unsafe for American children, so they shipped it all over to Africa and started giving it to them, giving it to the Indians, you know, in India. So, of course, that thing happens that we knew would happen. We started getting all these epidemics of polio caused by the vaccine itself. That's why it was outlawed in the United States. It's a reproducible pattern that we're seeing. You know, another thing like fluoride. Here's fluoride. We get all of this information comes out now that there's absolute proof that fluoride given to small boys produces a six-fold increase in bone cancer, all the brain damage, immune damage. At the very time all of this is coming out from the new NRC study, the ADA is sitting in the conferences saying we need to put pressure on the bottled water industry to put fluoride in the bottled water.
You have to wonder why they would be doing that if they have perhaps another agenda.
Just absolutely unbelievable. Here's the state of California ordering all cities are going to fluoridate their water whether they want to or not. Even though the ADA admits itself that fluoridating water has nothing to do with cavities.
Yeah, in fact, it acts topically. It doesn't do any good to ingest it. So we're going to force everybody to ingest it. What's wrong with this scenario? We'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Russell Blaylock here at Radio Liberty. Well, Russell, how can people get copies of your newsletter?
Well, they can go to www.blaylockreport.com. They can get it that way. It's B-L-A-Y-L-O-C-K report.com.
All right, that's blaylockreport.com, and let me tell you, I subscribe to it. I pay for it, and I think it's a great newsletter. I recommend it to our listeners. Well, you know, we have so many other problems. Is there anything else you want to cover here in about 2 minutes?
Well, it's sort of a compilation of all these things. We're starting to look at so many problems that it appears as if the elitists in society are determined to destroy the health of the mass of the population and keep medical care cost high. And we have all this stuff about the enormous cost of medical care. Yet I've shown that you can dramatically reduce the number one cost, as heart attacks and strokes. You can reduce all the costs caused by fluoride, mercury. You could reduce the cost of autism. There's so many diseases, diabetes. You could massively reduce the budget spent on health care by doing these things. And if that is known and provable, there's no other explanation of why they're doing this except they want poor health in the American public, and they want a high budget for medical care costs so they can push their socialist agenda.
Well, you know, that sounds so incredible. If I wasn't firmly convinced you were right, I'd say that this could not be true, but I've been studying this, you know, for many years, as you have, and it should be obvious to anybody who listens to our programs to realize there really are people out there who do not want good health for our people. And people say, well, who would want to hurt children? I'd say, look, so far there are people here who want abortion. They've killed 40 to 50 million unborn children. They want to be able to kill them right up until the very moment when they're born normally. I mean, what do you think is in the mind of these people? Don't they know what they're doing? And the answer is, of course they know what they're doing. They just don't want you to realize that there are people out there who really believe in a genocidal agenda. And anybody who questions that will be glad to send them copies of Jacques Cousteau's remarks to UNESCO Courier in November of 1991, where he advocates eliminating 350,000 people a day. Russell, thanks so much for being with us. We'll look forward to having you with us again real soon.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan, and God bless
you. And you too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, fine. Well, I hope you've enjoyed our program with Dr. Russell Blaylock. I think they want to heed his remarks on magnesium, and we're going to be making some of these things available through our ministry. And, of course, you'll be able to get the book, Dr. Blaylock's book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, and The Miracle of Magnesium by Dr. Carolyn Dean. We'll tell you how in a moment. Well, it's Dr. Stan, and if you're interested in getting Dr. Blaylock's health letter, it's www.blaylockreport.com. That's B-L-A-Y-L-O-C-K, report, www.blaylockreport.com. I recommend it very, very strongly. It is an excellent newsletter. I look forward to coming every month, and it's really very, very inexpensive. Now, we do carry the book, The Miracle of Magnesium. We carry Dr. Blaylock's book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. You need to get both of them. You need to read them. You need to understand what's going on. We're carrying a new book on children's health. And, of course, it goes into many of the same issues. But you need to have this information. You need to get copies of programs such as this. And certainly, you can get a copy of this program today, if you'd like. There are things that you can take in the way of quercetin and alpha-lipoic acid. These are strong antioxidants, as is vitamin C and vitamin E, and they will help you. You need to be taking large doses of vitamin D during the flu season because it will help to prevent you from getting the illness. So much you can do about your health, but you're not going to hear about this through regular channels because the doctors really don't know. I know what I didn't know when I was practicing medicine. And we'll do everything we can to help you. We have a great four-tape set of my interviews with Dr. Blaylock entitled Life-Saving Health Secrets. We have a four-tape set with Bill Sardi and, on ascorbic acid. You need to be taking large doses of ascorbic acid to help you avoid heart disease, and, of course, it helps with your immunity. Ascorbic acid, vitamin C, is one of the most important things you can take. We carried Dr. Blaylock's other book, entitled Excitotoxins, the Taste It Kills, and we have a four-tape set on aspartame. We carry his book, Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients. If you know anybody who's going through chemotherapy or cancer treatment, they need to follow his regime so their hair won't fall out and so they won't get deathly ill. In all probability, they'll do far better if they do what's right and take some actually vitamins and minerals and things that nobody ever thinks to give them. And I've heard from several people that who followed this through and they haven't got deathly ill like everybody else has. You need to get the facts. Your health is your business. And if you don't look after your health and you depend on somebody else too, you're in trouble. You need to get our four-tape set on statin drugs. You need to get our our book we carry on statin drugs. We really think it's so important. You need to know about what they're doing to your food. We carry a book called Seeds of Destruction. It goes into genetically modified food. We got a great four-tape set on that. We have another book called GMOs, Beware of Genetically Modified Foods. Why would anybody want to do something of that sort? Why, very simply. There are people who feel that there are too many people in the world, and we've got to get rid of them. You doubt that? You need to get the National Security Study Memorandum 200, which we carry. It's a government document. It was classified for many years, but it was declassified a few years ago. You can get it on the Internet, or you can order it from us. NSSM 200. The book on genetically modified seeds is Foods is Seeds of Deception by Jeffrey Smith. And, of course, he's a frequent guest on our program, and you can hear him on our four-tape set on entitled Genetically Modified Food. So we do hope that many of you out there will want to get the information. We're putting together a health catalog of the of various things that we want to carry and that we are carrying, and then all the books that we are going to be carrying on this subject. And we'll add to it at times, but I think we have an excellent series of books. And let me suggest the book, The Miracle of Magnesium, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, which we think is certainly one of the best books you're going to be able to get. And then the catalog will be available in a couple of weeks. But if you want the items, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Our website, RadioLiberty.com. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Because if we don't turn back to God as a nation, we're going to lose this country. And then please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so, until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.